Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. My name is Scott Reich, and this is Crime Talk. Let's get to the docket. First, the not-so-princely Andrew comes out swinging. Second, Michael Avenatti thinks he's entitled to $94 million. The South Carolina Supreme Court tells Alex Murdoch no. An update on the New York Burger King incident. When the hunter becomes the hunted, it always gets interesting. Is there any rule of law left in the state of California? And then finally, our dumb criminal of the day. Let's talk about it. Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. It's Friday, January 14th, 2022. My name is Scott Reich, and this is Crime Talk, the most fact-driven, unbiased, true crime channel. First, if you haven't done so already, please hit that subscribe button. Then make sure you hit that little bell so that you receive notifications of when we go live or put up new content. Now, for those of you that follow us on Facebook, as well as follow us on our community page, that's right, we put a picture up last night. Where did we go? A date night with the lovely Miss Kristen. Well, that's right, we went to the National Western Stock Show that's been going on since like 1903 or 1906 here in Denver, Colorado. Haven't been in a while, but when you can harness your inner cowboy, that's not necessarily a bad thing. And when you do like to wear cowboy boots and you've seen every episode of Yellowstone, I think that makes you almost like a real cowboy. Anyway, Frank is putting together a video. It'll be part of our Off the Docket series, so it should be up soon. Take a look for it. All right, let's get to the docket. First, the not-so-Prince Andrew. A source close to the Duke of York has said that the prince will continue to defend himself against the lawsuit in the United States. And as announced yesterday, the Duke of York will no longer be known as His Royal Highness and has been stripped of military patronages. Sources said, given the robustness with which Judge Kaplan greeted our arguments, we are unsurprised by the ruling. However, it was not a judgment on the merits of Miss Jeffries' allegations. This is a marathon, not a sprint, and the Duke will continue to defend himself against these claims. Now, his accuser, Virginia Roberts Jeffrey, is said to be determined to snub any offer of cash in favor of her having her day in court. Now, Miss Jeffrey is suing the Duke in the U.S. for allegedly assaulting her when she was a teenager, 17 to be exact, claiming she was forced to have sex with him three times when she was 17. Now, Judge Lewis Kaplan dismissed a motion by the Duke's lawyer to have the lawsuit thrown out after they argued that Jeffrey had waived her right to pursue suit against the royal because she signed a settlement/confidentiality agreement that was with that guy named Jeff. Now, Miss Jeffrey wrote on her Twitter that she was pleased with the ruling, adding, "I'm glad I will have the chance to continue to expose the truth, and I'm deeply grateful to the extraordinary legal team." Well, let's talk about that, ladies and gentlemen. First, listen, all cases will more than likely be settled when it comes to the civil matters. We'll have to wait and see what happens. My guess is for a certain dollar amount, everybody could find a reason to settle. Just like the prince may have to face some embarrassing questions, so might the Miss Jeffrey herself, as to explain, how is it that your parents let you travel around the world when you're 17 with grown men, grown creepy old men? What kind of father allows that? But either way, she's already received some $500,000 from that guy named Jeff way back when, and it included that very inartfully drafted settlement agreement, basically saying anyone close to that guy named Jeff. Yeah, you need some specificity when you're drafting those settlement agreements, and they should have thrown some names in there, like, you know, Ghislaine, Prince Andrew. Otherwise, it's really not worth the paper it's written on, as the prince has discovered this week by the court's ruling. Really not surprised. Just like in a criminal case where at a preliminary hearing, the evidence needs to be viewed in the light most favorable to the prosecution, drawing all inferences in their favor. Same thing in a civil suit. The civil suit may be completely bogus, but the court has to follow the law, and the court has to look at the allegations as true, basically giving all deference and inferences to the plaintiffs to prove their case. It may turn out to be completely false, but you have to go through the process. We'll obviously continue to follow the Prince Andrew matter, because you know it's gonna get really good. And Ms. Jeffrey has some very expensive attorneys. David Boyce, one of the most powerful attorneys in the country, is prosecuting that case on her behalf. I don't know if it's a contingency fee basis. I'm assuming it is, but the guy probably charges $1,000 to $2,000 an hour, maybe probably $5,000 an hour. He is a pretty smart guy. We'll see if he can get a victory for Miss Jeffrey. Today's sponsor is CrimeTalkPrep.com. Okay, we've all been to the store lately. We've all seen it. Whether it's been toilet paper or food or Red Bull, it's not there because of shipping supply issues, okay? Bottom line, no one would ever thought that that would happen in America. The reality of it is, we really don't know what is going to happen next, and you need to be prepared to take care of you and your family. Now, hopefully you never need this stuff, but it is a good insurance policy. But if you go to crimetalkprep.com right now, guess what? You can save $50 on a four-week emergency food kit. And that kit provides breakfast, lunch, dinner, drinks, and snacks, totaling over 2,000 calories a day. Now, listen, every family should have one of these emergency supply kits in their home, ready for an emergency. If you're going out on a trip, have some in the car. Put it in that little go bag in case, I don't know, there's a big fire coming or there's a hurricane or a tornado. You never know what's going to happen. You got to be prepared. Go to crimetalkprep.com. You'll be happy you did. Next on the docket, Michael Avenatti. Remember him? That's right. Michael Avenatti claims that he has suffered mistreatment while in federal custody and is now seeking $94 million in damages from the Bureau of Prisons. Now, as you may recall, Avenatti rose to fame as the attorney representing the adult film actress Stormy Daniels in 2018 in her defamation lawsuit against now former President Trump. But Mr. Avenatti quickly fell from grace back in March of 2019. You can always remember when somebody's star rises that quickly, it usually comes down just as fast. So when federal prosecutors in California charged him with wire fraud and bank fraud, accusing him of embezzling from clients, and the prosecutors in New York charged him with three counts in connection with a scheme to extort Nike for $25 million, which he was ultimately found guilty of, guess what? He had to stay in the Metropolitan Correctional Center there in New York while he was waiting those trials in New York. Now, Avenatti claims he was subject to brutal conditions during that time, adding that he claimed that the only piece of literature that he was given to read was former President Donald Trump's The Art of the Deal. Now, according to the complaint, the Metropolitan Correctional Center is typically reserved for people who pose threats to national security. Avenatti stayed in a cell once occupied by Joaquin El Chapo Guzman and was in custody with multiple alleged terrorists. Now, a former Correctional Center senior executive warden told Politico that Avenatti being housed in the facility as a white-collar defendant was an anomaly and somewhat bizarre. Now, Avenatti was subjected to 24-hour solitary confinement for 94 days under constant camera surveillance. He had no communication with other inmates, and his cell was apparently freezing cold and had no sunlight. Avenatti also claims that the senior-level correctional employees pulled him aside and informed him that the then-Attorney General Bill Barr had specifically ordered him to be placed in 10 South. Like we stated, Avenatti was convicted of extorting Nike in 2020 and sentenced to serve 30 months in federal prison back in 2021. The judge in the Nike case cited the conditions in 10 South as a reason for his sentence being only 30 months. Now, Avenatti has been serving his time on house arrest in California, and his trial in California, which Avenatti represented himself, ended in a mistrial in August 2021, but he is still set to face a retrial in that case and another trial in New York on the charges that he embezzled money from his former client. We'll see how that turns out. He may get some money. I'm not sure he's going to get $94 million, but he may get some money if it was kind of directed at him. You never know. And when these people speak off record, you always have to take that with a grain of salt, because if it was actually true, they should speak on the record. Next on the docket, the South Carolina Supreme Court issued an order yesterday in opposition of the writ of habeas corpus filed by Alex Murdoch's attorney in November, calling it moot, meaning that there's really no longer a issue that needs to be decided. As you may recall, Murdoch's attorneys filed the writ back on November 10th, 2021, the same day that Judge Clifton Newman again denied bond to Murdoch on two county charges related to the alleged scheme to steal some $4.3 million from the family of the Murdoch's housekeeper, Gloria Satterfield. Judge Lee heard argument from Murdoch's defense attorneys on Monday, who are seeking to reduce Murdoch's bond to an amount that he can actually afford. Lee is expected to issue an order sometime either as late as today or next week. Now, the Supreme Court justices rejected the writ because the petitioner has been indicted on charges from which the Honorable Clifton Newman denied bond after his arrest, and then the Honorable Allison Lee had set bond on the petitioner's matter, makes it moot, means there's no longer an issue for the court to decide. And understand, everybody is entitled bail, and a no bond hold on a theft case is probably a little excessive, and that's why the court said, fine, we'll make it $7 million. It might as well be $70 million because he can't make it. According to his pleadings, he has like less than $10,000 in his bank, but yet he has retained attorneys that are probably billing at least $10,000 a day when you put all the attorneys and associates on the matter. Figure that one out. Next on the docket, remember the Burger King case we brought you the other day in New York? Well, we've got an update. Police have arrested the suspected gunman in the cold-blooded killing of a 19-year-old Burger King worker who was shot dead after she handed over $100 during a robbery. The New York Police Department announced Friday morning that a person of interest was in custody in connection to the murder of the teenager, Crystal Bayron Nieves. Two senior police officials stated the suspect, who is said to be 30 years old, was caught after police reviewed surveillance video from the scene of the shooting in East Harlem. Clothing seen on the suspect at the time was said to have been spotted with on his social media pages, and witnesses helped confirm his identity, according to the police source. The murder suspect identity is unknown, but police confirmed the suspect has a criminal history. A $20,000 reward has been offered for information leading to the arrest, with half of that amount being put up by billionaire businessman John Katmaditis, Katsimatidis. You try to pronounce it if you think I got it wrong. The CEO of the grocery store chain Gristedes, Banyan Nieves' family, was notified of the arrest hours after a candlelight vigil was held outside the Burger King at East 116th and Lexington, where the cashier was shot dead. All right, and take a look at the picture of that guy. Maybe it was just a bad picture that was taken, but doesn't he just look a little evil? And it's also a little weird that the homeless guy has a social media presence. Next in the docket, a case of where the hunter becomes the hunted. Marilyn Mosby, that's right, she's a prosecutor. Well, a federal grand jury has indicted Baltimore's top prosecutor, Marilyn Mosby, charging her with perjury and making false mortgage applications in the purchase of two Florida vacation homes. The four-count indictment alleges that Mosby lied about meeting qualifications for coronavirus-related distributions from a city retirement plan in 2020. Now, federal prosecutors allege that Mosby lied on a 2020 application form for mortgages to purchase a home in Kissimmee, Florida, and a condominium in Longboat Key, Florida. Now, Mosby has aligned herself with criminal justice reformers and rose to national prominence in 2015 when she pursued criminal charges against six police officers in the death of Freddie Gray, a black man whose death was while he was in police custody, and there were some riots and protests as well shortly after that. None of the officers were convicted. Now, according to the indictment in 2020, Mosby submitted requests for withdrawals of $40,000 and $50,000 respectively from Baltimore's deferred compensations plans, and it alleges that Mosby falsely certified that she experienced adverse financial hardship because of the coronavirus. Now, you have to remember, Ms. Mosby's salary for 2020 was $250,000 for just a poor public servant. Now, Mosby was required to disclose liabilities, but didn't disclose that she had unpaid federal taxes from a number of previous years, and that in March of 2020, the Internal Revenue Service placed a lien against all property and rights to property belonging to Mosby's in the amount of $45,000, the amount of unpaid taxes that she and her husband owed the IRS at the time. Now, a week before she closed on the Kissimmee home, Mosby executed an agreement with the vacation home management company, giving the company control over the rental property, according to the indictment. She later signed a second home rider, which stated that the borrower occupy and use the property as their second home and maintain exclusive control over the ownership of the property so that Mosby could get a lower interest rate. Now, Mosby's initial appearance hasn't been set, but, well, she is looking on the perjury counts of a maximum of 5 years per count, and on the mortgage-related counts, that carries a maximum of 30 years in prison. It's just kind of interesting, a couple of things, that the poor public servant that pulls in $250,000 a year has a tax lien and is buying rental properties and making false statements to such an effect. Not good for the prosecutor there. We'll follow that case. Obviously, she's given the presumption of innocence, but she could hardly say that the Justice Department these days is targeting her because of her political beliefs, and it must be pretty darn overwhelming evidence for them to go forward with it and not just dismiss it. Something to think about. Next in the docket, is there any rule of law left in the state of California? Look at some of these pictures. Looters, there's literally thousands of packages were torn through and discarded along the tracks of a Los Angeles railway on Thursday by looters who are now targeting cargo containers. Now, products such as the new COVID test, fishing lures, and expensive prescription drugs were seen scattered on the ground of the Lincoln Heights neighborhood in downtown LA. Thieves used bolt cutters to break the locks and whatever they can get their hands on while the trains are either stopped or slowing down. And the trains are used by companies like UPS and Amazon, which are obviously popular targets of thieves these days. Now look at the debris littered along the railroad tracks have reportedly been the result of recent burglaries, and employees with Union Pacific had cleaned the tracks just a month ago. Now reports of the thieves on the tracks have become quite common over the course of the last month, with people also digging through the debris for items of value. Despite the recent trend in cargo crimes, the LAPD said they do not respond to train thefts unless the freight company requests their help. Union Pacific taking matters into their own hands, saying they are increasing the number of special agents on patrol and will utilize additional technologies to combat their criminal activity. Now, it's been a while, but my recollection is that Union Pacific basically has the authority to hire their own police officers, and they have like their own police force going back to, you know, the 1800s when they had to protect the railways and the supplies. So good on them. I think the only reason the LAPD would probably show up is, I don't know, for crowd control, so things don't get too crazy and out of control. But I don't know what the hell is going on with California. Maybe somebody that lives there can tell me, and maybe I'm just got it wrong. Maybe it's a beautiful place. Great weather. I don't know what's going on there in LA, that's for sure. All right, finally, our dumb criminal of the day. Let's give you a quick recap of our contenders throughout the day. On Monday, police found a bag of methamphetamine on 37-year-old Brandon Syhak's pocket. The man claimed they were not his pants and tried to pin ownership of the pants on another man. But guess what? The defendant was substantially taller than the man that he tried to pin the pants on. It's the old, that ain't my pants, bro. Then we had an Oregon man, Andrew Lloyd, who stole $3.5 million in pandemic relief funds and invested half into Tesla stock. The stock skyrocketed from $200 what he bought it at to $1,000 a share, which is now worth $16 million. And of course, he lost it all to the feds. Wednesday, Sarah Franks and Caitlin O'Donovan broke into Jacob Collins' apartment in Clearwater, Florida, and threw containers of glitter at him. There were some comments about glitter something, but I don't really know why they were throwing the glitter stuff. Yesterday, we had a group of senior citizens unknowingly consuming pot brownies that were brought to the community center by a 73-year-old woman who was unaware that her son had made them from THC butter. Yep, you can't make this stuff up. And today, a man driving a late model Toyota Corolla was reportedly whipping in and out of traffic on Christmas Eve. A Monroe County Sheriff's deputy spotted the car and noted the driver was using his cell phone. The deputy pulled up alongside the Corolla, and the driver crossed over the center line, nearly hitting the police car. The 32-year-old man was pulled over, and the deputy asked why he was driving recklessly, and the man replied, "Yeah, sorry about that. I was FaceTiming my girl. We were arguing." The driver's speech was said to have been noticeably slurred. The man said that he had had a few twisted T's, probably the source of the argument. Where are you? Why are you not home yet? Have you been drinking? Well, needless to say, the man has been charged with DUI. Sometimes just don't take that call, bro. Say the phone didn't work. Say that's not my phone. Go with the guy from Monday. That ain't my pants. Do something. Stupid. All right. That's all we have for today. Thanks for watching. We'll see you next time on Crime Talk.